on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today, 89-year-old Albert Metzger of Fresno, California, the same city where he grew up as the youngest of 10 children in his German-American family. He played football and baseball for the Tigers of Edison High School, and he spent a year at the start of World War II building ships in the Bay Area. But then he volunteered for the Army Air Corps and ended up surviving 30 missions in the skies over Europe as a B-24 waste gunner with the 565th Squadron of the 389th Bomb Group. The squadron insignia, a buffalo with all four hooves squeezed aboard a flying bomb. You don't see that every day. When we left off, Mr. Metzger had described flak so thick he thought you could walk across it, he told us. So I'm thinking, Mr. Metzger, that your plane did not escape unscathed from all those missions. There had to be at least a few missions where you came back with some holes in that airplane.
Oh, yeah. One time, flak knocked out our one engine, and that was before we even got to the target. So I remember that day, then, when it knocked it out, we turned around to go back. So we were all by ourselves, and then I guess our pilot called, but the next thing I know, there's two P-47s following us to take us back home.
Well, and I imagine you in particular had to be pretty relieved, because without them there, you would have been the line of defense.
When we seen them two fighters there, my God, it was like the Lord sent them or something.
How close did flak ever come to you personally, where you were on the plane?
Oh, I had seen a few holes come through where we were in the waist. There was a few holes you see pop through. But anyway, what I was going to say was, when we lost that engine, we didn't make it to our base, so we flew in and landed at a B-17 base, and we were there for 4 days till they come and picked us up. And for 4 days, that's all we did, was argue which was the best damn plane. Was it the B-24 or the 17? For 4 days we went through that.
And I imagine you guys were just a tad bit outnumbered there.
Oh, you could say that again. And then the pilot that came and picked us up, I guess he was a hot shot, because when we left there, we were flying so close to the ground that the cows were running. And I didn't like that, because you could hit a turbine and you'd have just... But he was a hot pilot that way. He took us back. But anyway, we got home that. And it took us 4 days to get home from that 17 base.
And then you're right back to flying missions again?
Right again. Flying again.
I know maybe some of those run together when you fly that many of them and the flak is so constant. But when you would get back from a mission safely, whether all the engines were still working or not, would there be any celebration or congratulation? Or what was it like when you got back on the ground at your base?
Well, the little girl in the Red Cross always give you a coffee and donuts. And if I remember right, we used to get a shot of brandy or whiskey after each mission. And one of the guys in my crew didn't drink, so I drank his. So I always got two shots. And I liked that. But Jimmy Stewart, he was in the Air Force over there. Yeah. And he came, I seen him twice come after our mission, and we seen him be in there talking to us. Uh-huh. And the Red Cross girls would be taking care of us, but when he walked in, it was all over with us guys. They all went to Jimmy.
Surprise, surprise. Yeah, a lot of people have no idea about his accomplished career in World War II, flying American bombers. And obviously you knew who he was before? You'd seen some of his movies?
Yeah, I knew who he was. Very nice fella. He talked to you, and he just was nice. Nice guy.
You weren't jealous of him because of all that attention?
No, but he didn't know who we are. He just was there to give us a boost. He flew some missions himself.
Yeah, Jimmy Stewart had quite the service record in World War II. He was extremely humble about it. I've even read that he had it written into his movie contracts that no mention of his war record could be used in promoting his films. He didn't want that to be a big deal. You can find some great information online about Stewart's extensive efforts during the war, but by all accounts, he was a brave and skilled pilot commanding several different squadrons of bombers. When he initially signed up for the Army, this is a good story, he was like 6'3 and 138 pounds, so they told him he was too skinny. What did he do? He fattened up on steaks and milkshakes, he said, to get into the service. And I've read a lot of the stories about Jimmy Stewart, but I think one of my favorites comes from a 9-hour bombing mission to Furth, Germany. Long mission. Stewart's commanding this 445th Bomb Squadron. The B-24 that he was piloting got hit by flak right up front, right in the belly of the plane, just behind the nose wheel. But he kept it flying somehow, made it all the way back to their base. And then Jimmy Stewart brings this wounded B-24 in for a landing. The fuselage right on the runway. The fuselage literally fell apart. It's been described as having cracked open like an egg just in front of the wing, right at the flight deck. The whole crew got out unharmed. And here's the quote attributed to then-Major Jimmy Stewart as he exits that plane. He said, "Sergeant, someone sure could get hurt in one of those things." I'm not going to do my Jimmy Stewart impression for you. Anyway, some humor there from him. And Stewart would eventually retire as a brigadier general. By all accounts, he loved flying, was passionate about serving his country and fighting for freedom, and really enjoyed just being one of the guys. So, Mr. Metzger, I guess it kind of stands out a lot more now because we see it in contrast to our world today. But having one of the biggest stars in Hollywood out there flying with you, that seems like it was pretty remarkable.
Why, sure, just like him. He laid his life on the line just like we did every day.
After the war, because he made a lot of movies after the war for a long time, would you say that you were a little more inclined to watch his films because of the interactions you'd had with him and the impression he made on you?
I still watch his old films. Yeah. I'm still watching them up to these days. I like that.
Which one's your favorite?
The Western ones is the ones I watch.
Yeah.
I just watch them all.
The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance?
Yes, I remember that one, yeah.
How about Mr. Smith Goes to Washington?
That was another good one. I didn't care for that as good as the Western. I'm a Western person.
You want to be a cowboy, huh?
No, I don't want to be a cowboy.
Well, you definitely didn't want to be one during World War II with everything that was going on and the parts you were in. You talked about flak. What about fighters? Did you encounter any ME-109s or German aircraft?
Yeah, every once in a while you got them coming through. Everybody be firing at them, but I've seen a few go down.
Did they go down because of your guns?
Well, I don't know. Everybody was shooting at them, so could have been mine or the next guy.
Well, that's another question. When you guys are flying in formation and a fighter comes between you, are you shooting each other?
Oh, no. You just had a certain range you shot at. That was it. I remember on one mission, a group flying up high and a group flying lower went over each other, and then when they dropped their bombs, it knocked down some of our planes. And I remember one day on one of them missions, deep into Germany somewhere, there was a group behind us. I don't know if they were B-17s or 24s, and we were ahead of them, and we got the call that our escort behind us wasn't there in time, and the fighters hit them. And I remember looking out the side there, and I must have seen about 30 or 40 parachutes of American kids going down. And then they warned us that we were going to be hit next. But our fighter group showed up and chased them away before they hit us. So I'll never forget all them chutes going down.
Yeah, I guess in a moment like that, it's easy to say, hey, that could be me right there.
That's right, yeah. I just wonder how many made it down.
You mentioned seeing the German fighters coming your way. What is that like for you? Do you get an adrenaline rush? You know you're going to have to be on that gun and firing away?
You have to. You can't lay back. I mean, you got to be ready at all times for that. And that's what you did.
Was anyone on your crew ever wounded?
No. That we were lucky there. Everyone made it through.
Especially at the time you were over there. That's pretty remarkable that no one, and your plane got shot up plenty, no one was hurt.
No one was hurt through all 30 missions, which was lucky, I guess.
This might not be an easy one to answer, but when you think back on that, and you've shared a few of those moments with me, is there one mission or one moment that you look back on and say, that was the closest call or that was the most afraid I ever was?
That was when I looked back and seen all them parachutes going down and we were going to get hit next. That's when I was scared. And we were lucky they didn't hit us. That was the one that sticks in my mind.
So it might not be an exaggeration to say all those fighters showing up really were an answer to prayer, at least your prayer.
They sure were. If it wouldn't be for them, we wouldn't be here.
Well, and a lot of people wouldn't be here because you and Donna are going to celebrate your 67th anniversary this year. You never would have met her, your three children and seven grandchildren. You adopted a daughter later as well and seven great-grandchildren. A lot of people wouldn't be here. That's pretty wild to think about, isn't it?
It sure is. I don't know what I'd do without my wife, really. She is mine.
Well, I'm going to have you tell me in a minute the story of how you two met when you got back home after the war. but 30 missions, and they give you the Distinguished Flying Cross. Did you know what that meant, how significant that was, and that it isn't necessarily easy to be given that medal?
I just thought it was just a medal, that was all. I didn't know what it was, really.
Did they mail it to you, or they pin it on you?
They pinned it on me.
Do you remember that? Were a lot of guys getting it pinned on, or what was that like?
I think it was above Sacramento where I got discharged.
When you completed those 30 missions, and they told you you could come home, you had enough points to come home, was that a great day for you? Was there part of you that felt for the guys who didn't get to come home? What was that like for you?
Sure, because I knew my brother was still over there when I came home. And, you know, that worried you.
But he did make it home.
He made it home. After me, he made it home, yeah. He was in a little longer because I got out early on points.
You got all those points for all those missions. You mentioned your brother, and he wasn't a pilot. He wasn't part of an airplane crew, but he ran the officers' club on your base?
Officers' club, yeah.
And you weren't an officer yet, or you were?
No, I wasn't, but I got to sit in the back room with him in his office back there.
So you're an enlisted man, but your brother runs the officers' club. You're not 21. You're probably 19 when you get over there. Tell me what kind of special access you had to what the officers would have because of your connection there.
Anything I wanted in that back room. He took care of me.
Did your buddies figure that out? Did they ever try to get you to maybe get some contraband for him?
No, never did. I just took what I could get when Adam was there, and that was it.
Have you ever taken a look, examined, tried to quantify or grasp all that your plane and your squadron and your bomb group did in terms of the bigger war effort? How much damage you inflicted to the enemy?
No, not really. We got a citation, the whole group.
Well, one of the things on this show over the years, in addition to the just intense, hair-raising, and mind-numbing situations that we've heard about, there are some ones that make you chuckle a little bit. And the lighthearted moments of war come to mind. And I understand you have a story along these lines. We'll try to tell it in a clean and humorous way here without getting too graphic. But, you know, you mentioned that there are some emotional impacts still after the war, and you had some guys that got a little jittery before you'd take off. What was your tail gunner's issue before you'd go on a mission?
Well, before we'd go on a mission, he always had to go to the bathroom. And then we'd get on the plane, and once we got up in the air, he'd have to go to the bathroom again. So every time he'd have to go in the bathroom in the airplane, he would go in an ammunition box. And then we'd open the escape hatch and throw it out. And always wondered if it ever hit a crowd in the head.
You'd wait till you were over enemy territory.
Over enemy territory, and then we'd drop it out.
Well, you were a bomber, just a different kind of bomber, I guess.
Different kind of bomb that went out, yeah.
Well, did you guys tease him at all about that?
We always teased him. We always got on him for that. Every time he got back in and sat in that box, we'd laugh. And well, every once in a while, we'd pinch him a little bit when he was sitting there. Yeah, we had a good time with that.
Well, and in the official records of the 389th Bomb Group, it shows how many targets were destroyed and how many enemy aircraft were shot down. I don't know if they kept a statistic for how many enemies were hit on the head with unidentified flying ammunition boxes, huh?
Yeah, that's right. You hit it on the head.
Or hit someone on the head, anyway. You mentioned before Sweet P-1 and Sweet P-2, and that Sweet P-1 was shot down.
When we got there, that plane had already been shot down.
Okay.
And we got our plane was Sweet P-2 right away.
So you flew all 30 missions in that aircraft?
Sweet P-2, yeah, that was 30 missions in that same plane.
And something tells me it didn't just have the writing Sweet P. There was probably some kind of artwork on the nose?
Little bombs. On every time you did a mission, you'd paint a little bomb on there.
Yeah, and anyone who has paid a visit to Castle Air Museum up in Atwater can see that firsthand. The B-24 on display there has those little painted yellow bombs lined up on the nose of that Liberator. We've heard quite a bit from 89-year-old Albert Metzger of Fresno, California today, but we're not done yet. If you want to see some photos of him then and now, just hop onto Facebook. You'll even see Mr. Metzger and his wife, Donna. They'll have their 67th anniversary this year. Just hop onto Facebook, type in Hometown Heroes Radio. And keep it right here for the rest of Hometown Heroes right after this. If you are a World War II veteran and you have not been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., Honor Flight wants to take you there free of charge. The sooner you submit an application, the sooner Honor Flight can get you to your memorial. In Kern County or the Central Coast, call Lily Marsh at 661-544-VETS. That's 661-544-VETS. Or go to honorflightkerncounty.org. For Fresno, Madera, Merced, Mariposa, Kings, or Tulare counties, check out CV Honor Flight, CV as in Central Valley, cvhonorflight.org, or call Al Perry at 559-970-9853. That's 559-970-9853. Maybe you're the son or daughter of a veteran and you'd like to go along as a guardian. There are applications for that too, and there are other ways you can help. Donations to Honor Flight are tax deductible. We all owe our freedom and liberty to the men and women who put their lives on the line for it. Let's all come together now behind Honor Flight and give our veterans one more tour with honor.